Thank you for the introduction. That was quite, I think it's, I should have wrote to someone earlier to ask if I don't go after Amir, because like it's really hard to follow somebody who's so full of energy and so full of like good ideas and yeah, principles that we should follow more and more. So yeah, I will talk to you about MPC, basically, some of the tools that can provide some of the privacy expectations that the cypherpunk values might actually benefit from. I'll give you an educational tour of MPC, so from auctions to ZK, my A to Z. I don't know if it works. Is there a way, sorry. Is there some special trick? This? Yeah. Okay. I go back to the start. So yeah, I want to give you a bit of an overview of MPC from A to Z, which if you know about MPC use cases, it's from auctions to zero knowledge. And so one thing I wanted to start by, and maybe this room kind of appreciates this, is that cryptographers are not cypherpunks. And I think I come from a background of cryptography, and there is a tendency in the cryptography community to think that because we build the tools that can, you know, help us exercise the freedoms and the cypherpunk values that we want, we do feel like we are some sort of rebels. But after quite some time now, I kind of realize that's not actually the case. Mostly what people, like what the cryptographers actually like to do is push symbols around to try and make some proofs of security and feel smart. And so this is great, and it's really cool that we have secure protocols, but it does not make them cypherpunks, and it does not result in the sort of freedom tools that the cypherpunk values maybe need, and the types of things that Amir was talking about just now. So yeah, cryptographers are not cypherpunks, and this is why I kind of put it in this session, in the cypherpunk session, rather than the applied crypto track. And so I think in building kind of freedom tools or, you know, privacy preserving tools, it's important to kind of understand some of the cryptography. And so yeah, this is why I want to give you some view of MPC. So what has MPC been used for? And first of all, does everybody know what I mean when I say MPC? Okay, one, two, three people. So MPC stands for multi-party computation. Is there anybody like who has absolutely no clue at all what multi-party computation is? Okay, one person at the very back. You're too far back to, no, but anyway, MPC is used for computing on encrypted data. So it started in the 80s with coin flipping, mental poker, comparing integers, small things. And essentially what it is that, you know, a user, Alice, has some data in her local device or in her machine, in whatever machine, she can secret share it to a network. And this network communicates, nodes in this network communicate to do computation on her encrypted shares, and they produce a result. This is it, essentially. And so the first large-scale kind of practical example of this was the Sugar Beet auction, which was run in 2008. And this was a double auction to determine the market price of sugar beets. It was an MPC run between farmers and a sugar processor and researchers in Denmark. It was super nice because everybody agreed that this was kind of needed and useful. The farmers didn't have to reveal how much they were willing to pay. The sugar processors couldn't, you know, take advantage of farmers, and everybody kind of won. So this was a super nice example of an auction that was run in MPC. Something that could have benefited from something like this is, let's say, the Constitution DAO, who lost an auction because they revealed how much they were willing to pay, and, you know, their competitors could see how much there was in a public wallet before. Another one was the Boston Wage Study, so identifying salary gaps across gender and ethnicity. So this was done in Boston. They did MPC, so like a private computation across census data to try and analyze whether there was a disparity between gender wages across genders. Naturally, they found that there was. And they found, I think it was 30%, maybe it's too small here. Oh yeah, it was 30%, I think, in 2016 when they first did this study. And they did it again last year, no, 2023, yeah, last year. And it had decreased to 21%. So by doing this kind of study, at least you become aware of some problems, and then maybe you can actually start to try and solve them, which is quite nice for society. There was also an Estonian student graduation. So I don't know if you noticed, we are also doing a bit of a tour of different countries here, and these countries are where a lot of the main MPC researchers are actually from. So it's kind of interesting, also geographical tour of MPC. But this study was to try and determine if the dropout rates in IT studies were due to people working at the weekends, if their part-time jobs were interfering with their studies and causing them to drop out. And this was particularly important in Estonia because they became a much more technologically relevant country and they needed a highly skilled IT force, but they had high dropout rates, so they were really trying to increase like the education of IT workforce. They actually found that there was no correlation between these two things, but which was a bit sad for the study, but like at least we got a nice example of MPC out of this. So it was run between the Ministry of Finance and the university. So another one was, and then things started to turn a bit weird. All of these things kind of had like nice societal implications, but then, you know, the tooling and the MPC protocols became a bit more efficient, and they started being picked up by big tech. And the Google, so Google had this experiment with MasterCard, I can't remember what year, 2017-ish, 18 maybe, where they wanted to achieve the holy grail of advertising. So this was the headline at the time. And so Google, as you know, has like a very predatory ad model where they try to mine things from your information. And the holy grail of this ad model is essentially linking your online activity with your payments. Google doesn't have all the payment information, but MasterCard does. They can't compute together, like MasterCard would never be willing to share people's information with Google just in the clear, because it's first of all illegal due to whatever privacy regulations and consumer protection regulations. But Google also would not be willing to share their information with MasterCard. So they had some sort of blocker where they wanted to get around, and they were like, okay, we want to compute on each other's data, but how can we do this in a legal way? So they did an MPC between some Google and MasterCard to do some aggregate statistics. So saying, I show you an advertisement for some privacy bracelets on your browser. Did you actually go to the store and buy privacy bracelets? Or how many people went to the store to buy privacy bracelets after they saw this ad? So this was the kind of thing. And then another one, WorldCoin iris scanning. So this is maybe something that you've, actually now it's called World, I should have updated this. But this is where an orb scans your eye and tries to do some uniqueness checks so that people cannot register more than once. They got a knock on the door from some regulators saying, you know, how are you processing this data? Where is it all stored? And so then they decided to do some multi-party, to split this data and do some multi-party computation over it. And so these last two cases kind of start moving towards the dystopian, maybe I shouldn't say this, but like realm where, you know, people are kind of doing MPC to sort of sidestep regulation. And so I think the cryptographer point of view is a bit like, you know, okay, there are problems in society and we have privacy issues, like just throw MPC at it, like just throw some crypto tools at it and that's all fine, like your problem is solved. But I don't think this is necessarily the case, because like with the Google and MasterCard example, there was really kind of a lot of, not uproar, but like discussion at the time about whether this is actually good or not. Like, is it good that now Google and MasterCard can collaborate on our data? Okay, sure, I can't be singled out, it's not my data necessarily, but like as a group, we all kind of suffer because Google has more power. And so this is a bit questionable. So it's not really like just throwing MPC or just throwing cryptographic tools at a problem doesn't necessarily solve the privacy issue that kind of underlies the whole thing. And so the question then, I mean, like, I think, is it possible to solve these things? You know, like, how do you start to think about solving privacy issues or, like, you know, adhering to these cypherpunk values with cryptographic tools? And there are some super nice examples, which maybe you have actually seen at this venue. So one of them is from Cursive, who are a small team who are building privacy-preserving applications. And they are doing private proof delegation. So this means that actually you have these badges or some stickers or some CoSnark bracelets or whatever. They're downstairs in the main hall just after the registration. You can go. And essentially it's a chip that you can tap with your phone. You can enter your socials. And then when you tap other people's chips, you can do a private intersection of your common connections, so the common people that you've met and tapped, and then you generate a proof on this private intersection to prove how many connections you have in common, and then you can rise up the leaderboard and get some merch, crypto conference style. But the reason that this is interesting is because, you know, as things become a bit more complicated, the proofs get big, and actually your phone gets slow, and you know, these things need some libraries for verification and proof generation and all sorts of stuff. So sometimes it becomes a bit restrictive to actually do proof generation on your phone. So then an answer might be, well, why don't we actually start delegating proofs? And you see this a lot with, I think, the development of proof markets. So like all these proof markets started popping up over the last years to say like, ah, hey, we can, you know, have some pure beefy machines that will generate your proofs really fast for you. Which is great, but like if you have any sort of sense of privacy at all, this is terrible now, because now you're just outsourcing all your private data to this server who will generate proofs for you very quickly. But yeah, you don't get any privacy here. You outsource your proof generation, but you do it in a secret shared way, like in this MPC way, and you generate the proof over those secret shares. And so this is being done now downstairs. Not downstairs, but like in the internet. You can see it downstairs. So yeah, this just happened yesterday. And when I say actually you can outsource this to a network, this network is not this mystical being in the sky as it has been for the past 20 years. Now it is actually live. So there's one network that is run between us, Tadzeo, the Cursive guys who built this nice cryptographic connections app, and the PSC group. So each of us are running a bunch of nodes that are generating these proofs on these secret shares. So yeah, go down and see them if you want to actually feel MPC in your hands. There's also actually an MPC exhibition that you can learn more of the history. So yeah, actually what they're doing is collaborative snarks, generating collaborative snarks, which is just generating zero knowledge proofs in an MPC network. Currently, they are using our tooling actually to do this, which is available for Circom. So if you're used to building Circom circuits or Noir circuits, which is up and coming and getting lots of hype this week in particular, and now you can use our tooling to do the same thing but in an MPC environment. So yeah, that's snarks. And so yeah, all the stuff that you will generate here are collaborative snarks. And so how is all of this stuff actually leading to these kind of new nice things that are not just getting us around regulation, but like this actually cool solving privacy problems kind of tech? And I think the most interesting thing that MPC is kind of enabling now in this blockchain world is this private shared state. So you have these private blockchains, or L1s or L2s, like Aleo and Aztec, who now have zero knowledge smart contracts, and they have like private state and sometimes public state, and you generate proofs on your private state, and you can do stuff with the public state and interact. And this is nice, but in a sense, it's a little bit limited, because the zero knowledge proof is just a statement about a fact, and like it's very difficult to actually do computation with that. And so if you can instead have a sort of MPC network where you can maintain your privacy, you can actually do more, like, so you can actually do computation on all of your private state instead of just having zero knowledge proofs in public state. And so you remember this picture from before, we had like one party secret sharing their data to nodes in a network. Now I think the interesting part with private shared state is when you sort of introduce other players or other entities. So now you can take secret, like multiple people can share their data to a network in a privacy-preserving way, and the network can do computation over that. And I think this is super nice because we don't have to start revealing things to anybody. We don't have to. We have like all full general-purpose computation and not just kind of workarounds with zero knowledge proofs. So for me, this is like the most exciting thing that is happening in the crypto world at the moment. So I think with that, like the privacy conversation is becoming super nicely nuanced. It's not like full, like privacy is not secrecy necessarily. It's like you're not like completely black boxed and tied off from everything and nobody can see my data and no one can touch it and I can't even use it and like you shouldn't learn anything about me. And it's not like fully open like everything on Ethereum. If I interact with the chain, like everything is public and everything is recorded forever. Now we're kind of finding this like somewhere in between this all or nothing approach. And for me, this is super nice because in my life, in my day-to-day life, I come here, I stand in front of you. I want to be seen at times, but I also at times don't want to be seen and I want to choose. Like I want to have the option to come and like see people and I want to share myself and my thoughts sometimes, but I also want the option to not. So having this sort of and I also want to sometimes avoid some people and talk to some other people and whatever. Like, so having this nuanced view is super nice. And so if you are sort of MPC inclined, but not necessarily a cryptographer, how can you start thinking about these? And I think one of the things that we're seeing is like, okay, you know, I get excited and I'm like, oh, look, it's like it's live. You can actually use it now. It's great. Everybody should do this, like, and some people are like, wait, no, though, like, because, I mean, like, Amir, like, he's talking about super serious things where people are, like, dying and whatever, and it's like, okay, yeah, maybe, like, my little MPC protocols are not for that case, and, like, the question then is, like, okay, who are your adversaries and how much power do they have? And so, like I said to you before, that we are running these co-snarks on the network, which is established between us, Tadseo, PSE and Cursive. So in a sense, you're outsourcing your work to us and you're outsourcing your data to us. So in a sense, you trust us. You trust us not to collude because if we all come together, we can reconstruct your secrets. And so one question that you might ask if you're starting to think about these things is like how many people need to actually collude? Is it like all of them? Is it just one of them? As long as one of them is honest, is it okay? And so there are different models and different trade-offs that you can make and different levels of efficiency and things like that. So another one is then, yeah, like different notions of security. So like, okay, if somebody can tamper with your system, how much can they do? And so I think the most common model of things that are running now is this semi-honest security. So like parties can become corrupt, but they will follow the protocol as normal. So maybe there's some information leakage. Maybe you like learn some stuff by observing the network, but they still follow the protocol. And then there's kind of the worst case situation where you kind of try to protect against malicious security, and protecting against this means that, or like adversaries that can break security in this sense means that they can control and manipulate and arbitrarily inject messages, like they can just completely destroy your system. So like if you are running an election, let's say in an MPC, and you have a malicious, like if you have a malicious adversary, they could, you know, just change the results of your election. Like, you know, you have nothing. So if you want to protect in this kind of situation, it's super hard and you're not going to have much efficiency. That's for sure. So yeah, what about efficiency? I think I mentioned a few things, the WorldCoin example, the Cursive example. I think these are two nice examples of things that are running in production, which I think are the kinds of things I would hope the sort of cypherpunk people would care about more than the theoretical people who care about the math. And so in saying that, the difference between specialized protocols and like general purpose computation is quite different. So like you can do like highly, highly optimized stuff as in the case of WorldCoin, and they are doing uniqueness checks. You do about 40 billion checks per second. And okay, that translates to, okay, you have two eyes and you know, you have many readings and your iris is pretty like data rich. Yeah, it's data rich, so it's a lot. And this translates to, I think, about 15 people uniqueness checks per second. And so these Cursive co-snarks that we're generating downstairs, not downstairs, but in the network, are about 12 seconds each, but 11.9, like the vast majority of that, is the witness extension. So this is like the actual MPC part rather than just the proof generation part. So proof generation is very fast, but witness extension is not too bad. So this is where it's at now. And so that's it for me. If you have any questions, I will be glad to take them. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for your presentation, Esh. We've got a couple of questions here on the docket. But before we ask those questions, I meant to actually mention one fun fact about Esh here, is that she actually was an MC just yesterday, so she knows how it feels.
I know how you're feeling right now. After like 5 hours, I was like, I don't remember anyone's name. I don't know what even this topic, where are we?
This was a great one, though, even though it was technical. But the first question here is, when Co-Noir?
Co-Noir is now there, like now you can use it. So yeah, if you go to the Tadseo GitHub, you can go and find Co-Noir and play with that.
Awesome. And then what's the difference between ZK with MPC versus FHE computation?
Well, I resisted saying things about FHE. So FHE is great and like is a super ultimate goal for privacy, because even if like there is collusion in the network, stuff is still encrypted and you cannot, like, it's like a better level of privacy, but it's hyper inefficient. Well, like it's super inefficient. So I think we saw at ZK Summit recently, if you wanted to generate zero knowledge proofs in an FHE environment, it was like order of minutes rather than, you know, tens per second. So wow. It's just slow. And I think FHE is often considered a specific example of MPC. MPC is super general, so everything can be cast essentially as MPC. But yeah, FHE is just slower.
Thanks. And the next question is about MPC wallets. Is it the future, and what are your thoughts on MPC wallets generally?
I also didn't mention MPC wallets, and I was going to make a comment about that. So for me, I mean, when I mean MPC, I mean like general purpose MPC, yeah. Like general purpose computation. For me, MPC wallets are kind of threshold signatures and things like this. So it's a little bit of a special case and like a kind of a sub computation. It's just one type. It's just generating signatures essentially. So it's kind of a small part of MPC. Super efficient. I quite like them personally. We don't work on any of that stuff, but I like it. Yeah, they're cool.
Cool. And there are a couple of questions that are more about the your opinion on things. But first one is, how do co-snarks work?
How do co-snarks work?
Very briefly, in like 20 seconds.
If you know how ZK works, you take the ZK and you split it over three people. Like essentially, like what is needed to compute a zero knowledge proof is essentially linear. So you just do it three times and you communicate and you get one proof in a nutshell.
Okay. And what do you think of TEE or T? And what is T?
Did this question come from someone who knows me or someone who doesn't know me? That makes all the difference. So TEE is a trusted execution environment, and it's like a super hot topic at the moment. I think they're wonderful. And so the thing is with TEEs, they're great, and it's a super hot topic at the moment. They're quite easily breakable. So I have sometimes been critical of them in the past, which is why sometimes I'm wondering if this is someone who knows me. But I think it's good. Like, so with the co-snarks, we talked about the collusion problem. And, you know, I said that in this network, let's say that we are running now, you trust the three of us not to collude. And so TEEs are one defense against this. If you sort of run the MPC in a TEE across, you know, the nodes in the network, it's one nice defense. And also, like, as I said, TEEs can sometimes be a bit weak. If you use three of them from different providers and like spread them around the world, it's also a lot better. So ultimately, I think, we're going to see that happening very soon.
Cool. Thank you. And I think we have time for one last question. How does the MPC network receive private data? Is it in the encrypted format for snark generation?
Yes. Simple. I mean, it's encrypted like across the internet, but overall, like before that, even from your phone, it's sent, it's split into secret shares, which is seen as, can be cast as a form of encryption. So essentially you encrypt it on your phone or your local device, and then you send it to the servers.
Cool. Okay, I think we got one time for one more. Can we remove initial trust set of MPC?
What's the initial trust set, I wonder? So like if you talk about like the collusion issue.
Yeah, I think that's what they're implying, is the collusion.
Can you remove it? I mean, not everybody's working on it, but like this is the big problem in MPC at the moment. Can you remove it? Never fully, I'd say. Yeah, we try. I mean, one, there are different options, like running things in TEs. You can start thinking about economic incentives for people not to collude. But yeah, this is a problem.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Ash.
Thank you. You're a better MC than me. You did a very good job.
Thanks.
Thank you.
But you can find out.